Yeah. Okay, now it's working. So, if I can get you to say your name, we'll get a level. I mean, you know, make sure it's turned up high enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we can have it. This will pick up everybody, I think. So, I am with Mr.
What's that?
You're supposed to say your name.
Guy Livingston.
And?
Hester Livingston.
And let's see, it's, what's the date? The 13th of February, 1992. I should ask you, as long as we were talking about the house being the only place here, when was this built?
I got back to 1831, and I've got some more to go. I couldn't read the last part of it, so I've got to go back and check some more.
Gosh, and it was a farm in those days.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to follow, because sometimes one family, there'd be three or four names in one family, and they divide it up and sell it out and buy it back. Quite a job to follow back.
And how big a farm was it originally?
About 160 acres.
And it had how many cows, would you say?
Oh, I don't know. They didn't have very big, too big a herd in those days. I should say probably 15 head, maybe 20 head with the young cattle. I'd say that. I don't know.
Yeah, I would.
There was three barns down here. I got this barn that's still here.
Mm-hmm.
And then another barn was a 90-degree angle to it. That's a horse barn. And then there's another 30 to 40 barn that went the other way. So you had a U-shaped barnyard in between. And that broke most of the wind and stuff that come from the west.
I'll be darned. And so, and the house always had a view as you were...
Yes, this was added on sometime later, but I don't know when. It was on when my grandfather bought it in 1885.
So did your father farm here too, or did
he? He was for a while, and then my uncle took the place over. And the house, the building part, the land was gone for a number of years, but they kept a 27-acre, at least call it sheep pasture. They kept that in the family. It's over about a half mile from here, over half three quarters of a mile further out toward the mountain.
And your father and uncle were over...
No, they were here.
They were here.
Yeah, see, there was... my grandmother had six boys. My father was the youngest boy.
Oh, I see.
And he and his next older brother had it... in the family there for, I don't know, quite a while, and then several years, and then they got rid of all except that sheep pasture, and finally I got this back in 43. I had delay en route for an overseas. 5 days at home in so, 4 years.
And it was out, did it go out of the family then before you?
Oh yeah, the buildings and that did. They had a piece of the land, but they sold the, couple others owned it before then. But the Richardson boys that used to have the mill down here, they always called it the Livingston place. And it was, I can't remember what the other fellow's name was. They had it for a while. But when I bought it, it was an estate from the Smiths over here. Probably Willie Bragg tell you about those.
I don't know that they did.
Well, I can't remember. I think it was his grandmother. It was related to the Smiths. And the Smiths bought that, we used to call it Smith Place, where my oldest daughter lives.
Uh-huh.
In 1850.
Uh-huh.
I see that when I was looking back through the thing.
Gosh.
And, one of them just died. Willie had the last of them, I guess. It's Harry Smith up in Wastefield Common. He died this last year.
Oh, yes.
And
I
Willie
met
had
him.
The handling the estate. He was related to him somehow, and then there was a Smith down in the village there. None of those are around now.
Well, now you were telling me about the sugaring.
Oh, yes.
Up there.
But that was over...
That was on
the old Tucker Hill.
They
went and named the other place Tucker Hill Lodge, but it isn't. It's just below Millbrook Lodge, the old Tucker Hill. And Uncle Rob, at Sterling's father, lived up there. And as I said, the one sugaring, they finished tapping, I think it was, the day that the Irish had over the ridge from them on the south, was started washing their buckets.
That's just and, amazing to me.
First of all, Uncle took had a big Holstein bull. He had to put in front of his horses to help break the road. The road in a few places. The bill exhausted. They had to bring it back to the barn. The snow was so deep.
Gosh.
And it wasn't too many years ago. When I was younger, wintertime, well, you slides right over the barbed wire fences.
And now they're really hurting now.
Yeah. And I had, when I was in my teens, I had a great uncle, my grandmother's uncle, Billy John Maxwell. He had a place up here, going up Pigeon Hollow, up toward Man River Glen. There's a red house there now, and the barn is gone. It's about the second place up above, where he turned on the German Flats Road.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to stay there. He's lost his wife, and I wanted to stay up there for about a week. Well, there he told me that his father had bought a wagon and had it come up on the barge and to Burlington, I guess it was, and they brought it up as far as they could up the other side of the mountain, probably up in Starksboro, maybe. But anyway, his father or grandfather, I'm pretty sure he told me it's his father. He was an old man then up in his 80s, my uncle, John Maxwell. And Billy John, they call him. And he said his father went over each day and carried a wheel over or an axle over, and he took over about a week, 10 days to bring all over. And he had the first four-wheeled wagon, or lumber wagon, in the valley. Before that, it was all two-wheel cars.
Because, of course, they couldn't get it over the mountain.
No, there was no road there, you know, just the last 20, 30 years.
When do you figure this was?
Back in the early or middle 1800s.
That's amazing.
Because he was an old man then. That was back about in the 30s, middle 30s. He must have been about 80 then. He said when his father's young man. So.
Amazing.
But he said he had the first four-wheeled wagon in the valley. But he had to lug over a piece at a time.
Isn't that amazing?
You wouldn't see anybody doing that today.
Oh.
He said he started out at daylight, get back, be about dark. He'd 2 foot little chores he had. Lord. Took him, he said a little over a week. So I figured a week, 10 days.
Gosh. That was quite a walk, too, you know.
He said he'd strap it on his back. They'd take it all day, get back at dark at night.
And I suppose he was coming up what is...
Around 17 now, up of a gap there.
Over the McCullough Turnpike.
Quite a
you know what the other side was like? It was years before they got down over there. You had to lug it up over there.
Gee. Incredible. And he lived in Pigeon Hollow?
Yeah, well, my uncle, Billy John, great uncle. But he said his father lived up just a little ways up where the German Flats Road is now. And he told me where it was. But that building's long gone. It's even gone when he's telling me about it. He told me about where it was. It's about a quarter mile up on the German Flats Road.
Now, why was it called Pigeon Hollow?
There was, I was going to say millions of pigeons. There's so many that people heard about. They come here from Barry or something, and they go in at night and club them to death, you know.
Is that right?
And they ate them, and it wiped them out. But they said that from the German Flats, up through there, what's called Pigeon Hollow.
And why was it German Flats?
I don't know how that was named. But it was named the German Flats Road. And my father lived on that, where Billy John Maxwell lived.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle Billy John went and took over where my father left. But my father was there about the time I remember 4 or 5 years old. And I remember one time they took some gravel up just up behind it. You can still see signs of it. Took it out by lumber wagons. And they took it down well, it was a covered bridge there where I turned up German Flats. And just before they got to that, they were arriving on the road. And how they did, they had two befores rounded out each
end.
They
were doing what to the road?
They were graveling it.
Graveling it.
So I went down with them once or twice, Friday's on it too. They had these two befores that went in the length of the wagon for the bottom. And they rounded out each end. And then some man get on each end of it to work on the road and pull that up through. And they pulled them across, and that's how they dumped the gravel, instead of shoveling it. And I always remember that. It's the only time
pretty
I ever see
ingenious.
It done.
Genius.
And I saw the snow roller once when I was small there. A big snow roller for packing the snow. And right at the moment, it flew down the foot of the hill here in that little house. He was doing the driving. And
who was?
Was driving the
Riley
the snow,
Moulton.
Snow
Riley Moulton.
He's gone. Roller.
Yeah, because I've seen Moulton. Is it Moulton Road? Or
what's that?
Isn't there a Moulton?
I don't think there's.
Well,
one.
He'd be no, grandfather said, or great grandfather to these Moultons that's mm-hmm. still down here.
She thought she'd seen a road by the name of Moulton.
Maybe not.
Could be. They've changed their names around and stuff.
Is there one over to the old Riley Moulton, you know, the...
It could be. I don't know.
I'll look.
He used one time, well, he lived down this little house foot hill, and before that he lived up on, I don't know if the old farmhouse is still standing, not just above that up, and you go out past the,
oh, that was the
Valley
one.
Ski School there. They're up to the end of the road, and that's where he used to live.
Uh-huh.
But he was driving a snow roller, and it packed snow 2 feet, you know, down yeah. the 4 or 6 inches. And he was driving that, and if I remember right, I think that was the one my father brought over from Waterbury. He was, one time before he tried by the, bought the farm, I guess, he used to be teaming, you know, or freighting.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent him over to get it, and he had a big pair of horses for those days. And I remember him sputtering about it afterwards, but he said he went over there, and they told him how much it weighed, and it was just about twice as heavy as they told him it was.
Yeah,
and he had to come up over Duxbury Hills with it. And they had to keep resting his team every few feet because it's such a load for
well,
him.
Well, usually they had a double team on that.
Yeah, but it was summertime and they told him how much it weighed in the summertime with no rolling, no snow to go through. They figured it was a single team. Well, said he'd known how heavy it was, he'd have taken a double team. So he didn't appreciate that at all. But yeah. And he had the farm there, I think, 2 or 3 years or so. And then lost all his cattle with TB.
No kidding.
And then he sold out. He went to, yeah, they had a TB epidemic with the cattle, you know, and it went all over the state. A lot of herds got cleaned out.
Oh, my gosh. When was that?
Oh, 1920, 21, along in there.
Oh.
Yeah, last I remember, I was old enough to see them all going down the road. It'd pay the farmers a little bit. It wasn't near what they were worth, you know.
Oh, gosh. Well, I've heard about them rolling the roads, and I always heard that they rolled the people's houses that had hard cider first.
Well, that could be true.
I what?
They'd roll the roads in that where there was a lot of cider.
Oh, well, I wouldn't doubt that. I heard my father tell me, up the stairs here, my grandfather, he said, put up 6 barrels of it every fall. Let's see, I was trying to. Seemed like it's something else I was going to mention.
I was also interested, we were talking before about your mother and the songs that she knew. And I wondered, you know, where she learned them and...
From her mother.
And would she sing all the time? I mean, while she
was
doing...
Oh, yeah, she sang a lot. Oh, she got older, got far, she didn't much. When she was a younger woman, she was always singing. And she had quite a variety of songs, you know, way back.
And would she sing while she was doing the wash or making bread?
No,
or
she was one of these kind that... She always busy because she'd take 10 steps and all she needed was one, but she always worked hard.
Did your father sing as well, or?
Not very often. Once in a while he would. Not too often. He was a hard worker. He's a regular workaholic, I guess. He kept right up to the early 80s working, and he lived to 88. My mother lived to 88.
Gosh.
And he was unhappy when he got where he couldn't work
anymore.
I bet. I've known him work all day and then come home. One time we lived up at Butternut Hill. Myrtle Johnson lives up there now in a little house. And he'd come home at night and go down on the riverbank. And the Merritt Bragg lived there then. And Merritt gave him all the wood if he wanted to cut it along that riverbank. There were good sized trees. And he cut all the bigger stuff at night. Got the wood pile that way after doing day's work. And the day was 9-10 hours a day then.
Well, now in the wintertime, would he do logging for some of the mills?
Yeah. And, he didn't work the mills enough, but he'd work the woods and that. He worked for Carl Long quite a few years. And had the store down the village. I can remember when I must have been 4 or 5 years old. My grandmother lived near what's called the old hotel down there.
In Waitsfield.
Yeah. And I spent a few days one summer. Must have been about a week. And there used to be a livery stable on that one end. It was over toward the saddle fair. And there was a livery stable first, and then they put it over into a garage. And the Desert Boys from Barry come out and started using it for a garage one summer. And someone ride horse up and down the roads on a motorcycle. There's a lot of noise and dust in those days. And the motorcycles, most of them were 1918, surplus from the First World War. And I was there one day when they brought one of the fellows in, one of the Desert Boys, and he lost control of the motorcycle and ran into a telephone pole down by the old high school. And he come in and he had the bone sticking out through his ankle. He was in a lot of pain.
Mm.
And they took him in and had a doctor in that for him. And
Dr. Shaw?
There was, I don't know if he was here, but there's 5 or 6 doctors in the valley. I still don't probably tell you, or less than better than that. I know there's a Dr. Warren, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And a Dr. Kent that went down to Burlington years later and was head of the hospital down there for years. And I remember, being in there.
Mm. Well, when did your grandfather or your great grandfather that, do you know where they came from?
Well, my grandfather came out of Canada.
Yes, sir.
And the oldest of the boys was born here in Vermont. I think that'd be Will. And the youngest, my father's born here. The rest were all born in Canada, the other 4 boys.
Yes.
So they moved up there and back. And my grandmother, Livingston, she was Maxwell before that. They were in the valley here back in 1840s now. I think it was several of them served in the Civil War.
Yes.
And one of them had a house just across from the den down there and up the dugway now. And one of the little house, as you go down and turn toward Warren, is his first house down under the hill there from the den. And there's a lot of Bairds in those days. I don't know, there's 6 or 7 Jim Bairds. And had several Maxwells of the same name. There's Big Sam, Little Sam, Black Sam, White Sam, you name it. And there were a lot of Richardsons. Most all those names have died out now. I mean, there's not many of them around anymore. Livingston are dying out.
Yeah.
So they'll be gone in a few years.
Well, maybe not.
But
So whereabouts in Canada did they come from?
I don't know, but when one of my uncles died, my father, and Sterling can probably tell you if you want to interview him again. I heard my father say it was 110 miles north of Montreal. I think it was 110 or 210, but I think it was 110. But it's north of Montreal, and of course it'd be the more Scotch Irish.
Well, I was going to say, with the name Sterling, it's not French.
Yeah. No, a lot of Scotch and Irish, and somebody asked what you know. And I told, well, my granddaughter the other day, she I told her, well, I said, it's Scotch, Irish, and I guess a little Welsh, English, and French. My mother claimed one time that her great-grandmother said that her great-great-great-grandmother was a daughter of an Indian chief Black Hawk.
That's
great. That just passed down through the thing, so you take it for what it's worth.
Well, but I think many of the older families have some...
I know on my mother's side, on my grandmother, on my mother's side, that all her relations were quite dark, and dark features and black hair. It's just last generation, so it's...
I'll be darned.
It's, you know, got these lighter hair and stuff. And some of them, some of the old ones I know, the old timers, had the higher cheekbones.
Did you have many sort of folk remedies passed down in your family? Because often with the Indians, there would be a lot of use of teas
away, you know.
And...
No, it was mostly, you know, goose grease and mustard plasters and all that. Most of the others had around here. But when the people first come around here, they used to say that it isn't just the way it is today. It's entirely different. All these people coming up from down country. You aren't native, are you?
I'm from New Hampshire.
Well, that's okay.
A border jumper.
New Hampshire and Vermont, pretty much like that. I get along with people from New Hampshire pretty good. But, well, a lot of the people come up from down country are pretty nice people. But there's a lot of others. This isn't a free country anymore. We have our... I would say right now that this state and the country is just about what Germany was in the middle 30s. And then a little more sanduin about it. And I don't care who knows it. I mean, that's the way I think about it. They have their informers and this and that. There's always somebody complaining about something. And they're always afraid that somebody's going to make something that isn't. You can see about that water thing down in the valley and the snow making and that. And they'll wait and that and keep bringing it up. And they'll go through that same thing over and over again. And even if I'm against it, lots of times I don't think it's right because they got their, you know, permits and stuff through it. But it's not free. This is, I remember when I got done the service, we had turned weapons in the first thing. One fellow said, you know, he said, we shouldn't turn these in. He says, we should go back to the States and straighten them out. That was World War II. Well, then it wasn't so bad, but today, it's too bad the boys didn't come back.
Well, there's no question there have been just huge changes.
Yeah, they were, the boys were, well, I always pretty disgusted. I had some of the veteran boys tell me things that they wouldn't tell others, I think, because they knew I'd been in the service too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that to keep your mouth shut on. But,
well, back to.
I was talking with a lawyer a while ago, and I mentioned, I said, I thought they got a bad shape, all the people, I said, in this country. I said, they're trying to change it around now, and I says, and I know some of them, I said, I'll never forget how they treated them. And he said, yeah, he says, I was served a hitch over there. He says, I come back, and he said, and they walked down the street and he spit at me. And he got all upset about it. He said, well, we'll forget it. But he was getting all upset. Well, didn't he, is that?
Yeah. Well, you would.
And I didn't know he was even in the service. He kept quiet about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But I told him I didn't take much away to do it, so.
Well, I'm interested in the changes. And, well, when your grandparents came here, I mean, this whole valley must have been very, very different.
No, I was talking to the Andrew Baird, that was young Andrew's father, chappy they call him. We do. He don't mind it, he says his friends call him that, but he doesn't like the others. I used to let him separate from his father, and his father told me that years ago somebody come into Valley, and from Ireland or Scotland or something, and they get hold of a little piece of land, and neighbor come down, well, if they want to keep his cow for the winter, they could have the milk for it, so he wouldn't have to feed it. Or somebody in Valley had a rump pig, he had something that, he'd give him a pig, it might be a rump, might not. And then somebody have a few chickens or eggs, something, so they could hatch them out. And they'd set them up, and after they got straightened away along with the rest of them, somebody else moved in, they all did it, it's all neighborhood. And they did things that kept it quiet. I mean, they didn't, they tried to let on, you know, the ones that got it knew it was being helped, and they appreciate it. But, and the ones that did it, let on like it was, these ones that are helping is doing them a favor. But today it's entirely different. They do something today, and they want it in, and if they don't get the name in the paper, they have to add it on the next week. And the ones that receive it, they figure they should go out and give them a big, write up a big thank you on the thing. Years ago they didn't do that. So somebody said, well, much obliged, something, and they let that. And I know I got help once twice a year when we first starting in after war. This day I don't know who some of them are.
Yes,
they got
right.
Quiet. We had a rough time the first few years. And they do it one way or another. It's entirely different today. And back in those days, a person would keep his pride in and accept it and pass it on. I don't know.
There was a whole different ethic, no question.
Yeah. I have people out here by me. I don't think I know a dozen of them. Probably half of them are people I trust. Otherwise, I wouldn't turn my back to them. It used to be when I first started build up here, I wouldn't know them. They'd come in at night and say, well, I'm off-road, you could take your tractor and pull me out. Well, my tractor's usually laid up for put up for the winters. But I'd tell them they could call a wreck or something. But I didn't know them, Adam. They'd come in here and I'd tell them they'd use the phone. But they went by as fast, I didn't know who they were. Neighbors or not, but they come in all of a sudden, they were my neighbor.
Now you
and
said...
People don't neighbor where they used to either.
You said you were the only farm here. There wasn't much behind you.
Not after the war. So I come home, I had 5 days delaying around, and I bought this place while I was home. And I owned Millbrook Lodge at one time. I bought that when I come back from California. And it was in my folks, my name. And before that, belonged to what they call Jack Daney. And he was had a one leg at the he lost in the Civil War.
Gosh.
An old man in white beard, and he used to town clerk and that for years. And I got the, well, got that locked for more reason than we get up today.
Yep. Well, the ski industry has, I suppose, been the biggest cause of change.
I suppose it's been a big boom to Valley, but it has its drawbacks too.
Well,
I think my wife and I enjoyed the Valley a lot better when we were last on the road. I know I did.
Yeah, our kids could go out and play and not have to worry about being run down. And
I used to park a car out on the road there a week at a time.
If I had any company during the day, he could tell that I had company. Just for the tracks.
Well, when before the ski area came in, it was mostly a mill. There were mills up and down the valley and farming and.
Yeah, the Ward was the biggest thing. I worked for them for a number of years.
You did?
Yeah. We used to. I worked for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
About every 6 months, I'd blow my top and get in an argument with them. They turn around and give me a raise in pay. Ended up, the only one who got more pay in the mill outside the Fords themselves was the Sawyer. But we'd have a rally, you know, and I liked. And I think they liked me. Because I know Merlin come in one time. I was working in the mill and on the clippers, they call it.
On the clippers?
Yeah, so you drop a board on it, cut, squared up both ends, it went up over automatic. I'd take the things off the rolls and stuff, have it sawed from the log. And had a hog behind me and all the slabs went down through that. We'd had, he got, so he knew me. He knew so he'd stay away from me for part of the day. Cool down. He'd come along and slap me on the back one day. He says, gee whiz. He says, you've got an awful temper. he says, I like you just the same. And that's the way I felt about them. But a lot of them were nice to the face, then talk about them behind the back.
Well, I know there's a lot of mixed feelings about the Ward Lumber Company.
Well, the Ward now, the old one, they sold out years ago, you know. But the Wards themselves, they can say what they want. They remember there were Wards once in a while, but I always thought it was pretty fair.
And they came in when? Do you remember?
Well, way back, my father went in when he was freighting it. He took something up for old Hiram Ward. It originally started the mills. And then there's Burton, and then Merlin, and Owen, and Holly. But the old man wanted something up to, taking up the mill or something here by where the hideaway is now.
Mm-hmm.
And he told my father to take him up. I don't know who paid him the less to do it. And Friday said he's always there, and Friday used to stop in there. He ran the stage, worked on the stage for a while. Henry Bettis.
Oh.
Henry Bettis said this.